Okay, I'm hooked up now. Good. All right. I'll call the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome to the meeting of the Compliance Audit Risk Management and Legal Affairs Committee, formerly referred to as CAL Committee. The only person who uses that word formerly referred to is Jerry Blakemore. I will now call the CAL Committee to order and ask the committee's Administrative Secretary, Julie, to take the roll call, please. Ms. Edwards? Oops. Everybody's here except Julie.
No, I moved. Trustee Wheeler Coleman. Trustee Anthea Iasco. Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Sherilyn Muir.
Here.
Trustee Mark Strauss.
Here.
Student Trustee Paul Julian.
Here.
Board Chair John Butler.
Here.
And Committee Chair Robert Boy.
Here, thank you. Mr. Blakemore, do we have quorum and appropriate notices under the Illinois Open Meetings Act?
We do, Mr. Chairman.
And may I have a motion to approve the proposed agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. And Julie, you have the motion and the second by, right? All those names. Okay. All right. The motion is approved. And may I have a motion to approve the minutes of November 6, 2014 on the CAL Committee minutes? Okay, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Public comment, Mr. Blakemore, any requests there?
We've had no requests for opportunity for public comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let me take a moment, offer my remarks as CAL Committee Chair. Let me begin by thanking each of you for attending this meeting, and I would like now to recognize the various leaders of the university constituent groups. Dr. Bill Pitney. Bill, are you there? Good morning. Okay. Deborah, Ms. Deborah Hallitzer, President of SPS Council, and Dr. Gregory Wass. Greg, good morning. Thank you. Thank you for all three for coming this morning. Jay Montero, President of Operating Staff. Jay. Good morning. Thank you. We're especially pleased that you're with us today. Any remarks would you like to share with us today, all four of you? Any remarks? You're letting me getting off easy. Thank you. The agenda for the CAL Committee involves an update on three important areas of our jurisdiction, and these areas include property insurance validation, gubernatorial changes, I do have used this word. Governmental changes in ethics requirements. Thank you. Yeah. Enterprise risk management. Given that the board has an extensive committee agenda and will also be meeting in special session, I want to limit our total discussion of the university reports to approximately 30 to 40 minutes. So let us proceed. Property insurance validation by Sarah Cliff, Director of Compliance Administration. Sarah?
Good morning. I'm here to talk about the total insured values that we submitted as part of our property renewal 2 weeks ago. And what I've provided is a chart that compares our total insured values, which includes everything, our buildings, our contents, our artwork, compared to the values that we submitted last year. And I'm going to talk briefly about the increase or decrease. Buildings decreased due to the demolishment of Douglas Hall. Otherwise, there was a 2.3% increase as recommended by MAC. And per one of the carriers, the 2.3 represented the lowest inflation rate among the states of members who participate in the MAC program. I also examined the Engineering News Reports Building Cost Index for a comparison, and for the year, building costs increased by 2.9%. So what happens is generally, for our buildings, they're automatically increased by the 2.3% unless we have some other valuation to go by. We did receive information on Northern View and Newhall, but provided by the owner. But that's what happened with buildings. With contents, they generally increased due to the 1% increase recommended by MAC, as well as departmental input from those whose content values fluctuate, such as ITS, Doc Services, Home Student Center, the Material Distribution Center, et cetera. We send out inquiries as it relates to their inventory and their contents, and they send it back in to us. And so there was an increase in contents. Fine arts, including special collections, which means the art on campus as well as the library's rare books and special collections at Founders, increased. And we have artwork in the all over campus, but for Latino Center, Rockford Education Center, and then the School of Art particularly. The library collection, which does not include the rare books and special collections, increased per the values reported by the library and Dean Dawson. Now, builder's risk, we did not report any builder's risk for last year, which is the insurance for if something happens during the building or demolishment of a building. But we did this year for the Stevens Building, the Grant Roof, and the Lucinda Avenue Extension Project. So we reported a value of close to $25 million. And then business interruption, which is revenue that the university would lose should we have to shut down operations for a period of time, increased. We had a new form this year that actually took into consideration deductions not previously contemplated, so it didn't increase as much as it may have otherwise, but it did increase. And so overall, we have a 1.54% increase. Last year's, I believe, was a 6% increase, which will be good news when it comes to premium time, because your total insured values is one of the major driving factors. So that's a general idea of what we submitted and what our insured values are.
Great, thank you. Yes, go ahead, Chair.
What is our policy on appraisals and reappraisals of the art collection and the rare books?
We get that information from the library, and they do, I believe they didn't, I don't know if they did it this year, but last year they did compare. They somehow came upon.
But do we have an outside appraiser come in and look at giving us an appraisal on the art and on the rare books that then is used as the basis of this element of the policy?
I don't believe so.
Is that something to think about at least?
Yeah, it would be a good idea. We also,
because usually that art and rare books sometimes even needs a different type of CHUP, for example, or a different type of insurance. So I'm interested in this, and it would be interesting also to determine what the appraisal value is on our art, especially the Southeast Asian collection, which we need to really be protective of. So if you could get back to the committee or to the chair, I have an interest in that.
Sure will. I can tell you we also have other insurance policies that are purchased for specific collections of art, like the School of Art and the Anthropology Museum, and they have their own. And this is our property that kind of sits above those.
Right.
And they may do appraisals as part of those smaller policies. I'll find out and provide the information.
But I'm interested in this also, especially since this is a major area for the university. Mm-hmm. I mean, our collections are of great value as an asset. So if you could give me more information, I appreciate it.
I'd be happy
Thank
to.
You.
Trustees, any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you, Sarah, for an excellent report, and we appreciate the work that you and your staff do. Mr. Jim G. Where are you, Jim? Thank you.
Good morning, members of the board.
Good morning.
It's going to be a pretty brief presentation. Basically, Governor Rauner has issued some executive orders which have added to the ethics requirements of the State Officials and Employees Ethics Act. One has to do with revolving door prohibitions, if maybe click up a little bit. These are the whereases. These would be the rationale for doing so. I'm not going to read them, but the basic rationale of the governor is that we can always have a higher code of ethics, and He decided to change some of these laws, or attempt to change some of these laws through executive order. And that's very controversial. I'll talk about that in a moment. One of the changes on the next slide is the revolving door ban. It just basically makes it more difficult for employees, state employees, to go from state employment to lobbying employment. While you're a state employee, you're not to negotiate with a lobbying firm or try to set a salary with a lobbying firm. That's a new requirement under these executive orders. Also, no former state employee within a year after leaving his or her position with a state agency shall accept any compensation from a person or entity for lobbying. So there's a waiting period that was added for people who leave state employment and go into lobbying. And these, just to be clear, there were already lobbying restrictions in the State Officials Employees Ethics Act and the Illinois Procurement Code, and these were added to those restrictions. They're not in lieu of the restrictions. One thing that probably is going to affect the average NIU employee more than the lobbying provisions is the gift and travel ban. There used to be a $100 cap on gifts. We obviously, as a university, do a lot of business with a lot of different vendors, and every once in a while, a vendor will gift an employee something, a Kindle Fire. I've had that circumstances come up a couple times where a vendor will give an employee a Kindle. Unfortunately, those are worth more than $100, so you can't accept that. But they'll often get gift certificates for $75, $80. And I get the question as ethics officer, well, can I keep this? And there was a pretty black line rule of if it's under $100, yes, you can keep it. If it's over $100, no, you can't keep it. And if it's 101, no. If it's 100, yes. The governor has issued this executive order just saying no gifts at all from anyone for any amount, not even a stick of gum. The issue is, and I asked the executive director of the Executive Ethics Commission, does this apply to us here at Northern Illinois University? Do these executive orders apply to us? And he said, it's up to you.
He's a big help.
I said, okay. I'm glad I called. I said, I hope you don't mean me. I hope you mean NIU. And he says, yeah, NIU. It's up to you, NIU. He said, I don't think the governor has the power to do this by executive order for universities. I think this is him speaking. I think it's an overreach of power. And I said, okay, keep talking, keep telling me this. Executive orders under the Constitution are basically for things like reorganizations. They're not to substantively change laws. And indeed, these seem to be substantive changes to the State Officials Employees Ethics Act. Now, clearly this goes beyond reorganization. Clearly this goes beyond what executive orders can do. However, an agency can always add to the ethics laws of the state. In other words, your ethics restrictions can be more restrictive than the state law if you want. So arguably the governor's executive orders do have effect, certainly in the governor's office they do. And a better argument can be made for agencies that are more closely associated with the governor's office. When you get to the university level, you're getting a little tenuous. What the Executive Ethics Commission has done is asked the Attorney General for some guidance here. What agencies are really bound by these executive orders? And they're still waiting to hear from the Attorney General. If they don't get a formal written opinion, those sometimes can take a long time. They're looking for some guidance. In the meantime, the Executive Ethics Commissioner said, you know, for the Ethics Commission itself, they're going to follow these standards. And he literally said it's up to our agency whether we follow them or not. I guess I learned this very recently, and I have not had time to talk to the institution on this. So I just lay it out there for a discussion or for
whatever.
For any consideration, if we want to discuss it at a different time or publicly. Yeah.
Right. We have a question by Trustee Coleman.
Sure.
I got a question. I don't know, Jerry or Dr. Baker, if you don't mind answering this question, what's your position on this?
You want me to start? The Office of General Counsel and the general counsels for all of the public universities have looked at the issue of the extension or the extent of the authority of the governor to use executive orders to promulgate new rules and regulations. What the ethics officer has said is correct in the sense that executive orders actually implement authority that's already been authorized by a statute. And if you go beyond that statute, then the executive order does not have any real legal meaning or not. However, there is a consensus amongst particularly the president and other presidents and chancellors that universities should take every opportunity to comply with the spirit of the executive order. And this is one of those examples where the spirit of the executive order says that, you know, we should not be taking gifts that in any shape, form, or fashion may influence the decision that is made or add factors that are not relevant, you know, to that decision. You know, so to the extent that it is practical, we will comply with the spirit would be the advice here. There are certain situations where if you are at an event and they're serving food, you know, we don't want people thinking they can't eat the food that's available to everybody because it happens, could be perceived as a gift. Well, it's not. And part of what my office and the ethics officer will do is take those particular fact situations and provide an opinion. But the overall point is we should comply with the spirit. The ethical requirements are by their very nature. They go beyond what the legal requirement is. And so that is how we will look at this.
You know, what comes to mind, Jerry, when you speak of this and you talk about, you know, food, it just brings to mind renowned Supreme Court justice who said, you know it when you see it,
right.
You know, and I think we need to live by that. There should be an instinctiveness that you know it when you see it, and it's not about, you know, roast beef sandwich, but it is about anything else. Even I think gift certificates.
Right.
Gift certificates to me, regardless of what the value is, whether it's $80, mm-hmm. that to me rings a bell differently. Then does it meet the letter of the law? Yes, but why is somebody giving anybody a gift certificate
right.
is a question. And I think that should be the spirit of how we address ethics within our university.
Correct.
I think Jerry's right on target with his comments on abiding by the spirit of it. Sometimes the spirit is a little fuzzy, though, on what's prohibited. So let's say we're forming a relationship with another university, and the president comes to my office and presents me with a framed photograph of his campus, gifting me a photograph of his campus. Okay. Yeah.
So the value is just what the frame is. And so if it were a 24-karat gold frame, I'd probably have a question. If it's a frame that you get at
right.
wherever, then, you know,
but if
that's
it's zero,
$20.
Then I can't take it. I got to give it back to him.
Yeah.
So we got to kind of
yeah.
figure out some yeah. of that stuff.
And if the photograph shows his office.
Right, that's what I meant, a picture of the school.
Right.
Should we accept it to, you know, memorialize our relationship with him, or is that something else? So, maybe I'm getting too much into the nuance. We need to subscribe to the spirit of this and figure out how to apply it. And then wait for the Attorney General to give everybody an opinion.
Exactly.
I kind of agree that with Jerry that we should abide by the spirit of this executive order that was issued. I think then the next question would be what policy changes do we need to do as an institution to kind of follow the spirit here?
I think there are two things that have to happen. And when Jim and I had this discussion earlier, this was prior to actually having an opinion from the executive director, which he actually received today. One, I think we are going to have to establish a policy for this and indicate even more important than the policy, which would be complying with the spirit, that we will have a mechanism to make those determinations. Right now, those types of opinions go to the ethics officer. And that decision would be binding, in my opinion, and we need to make that clear as part of our procedure. But we also need to make sure that we have the resources to sort of do that, because you can really get inundated with, you know, these types of requests. I would suggest that such a procedure establish a database so that we are consistent there. But this is a particular issue, especially as we look to do more in the international affairs arena, where we want to give gifts as we are traveling. We want others, you know, to provide documentation or memorialize who they are for us. I mean, the whole discussion we just had about art, I mean, that's a big part of. So we cannot ban gifts, but we really do need to provide some parameters. And part of that parameter would be materially relevant to the institution and not the individual. So that would be one of the criteria.
So that would be the distinction here, right?
Right.
So if Dr. Baker receives a framed picture of another institution, is it his personally or is it the gift to the institution? And can we accept that on behalf of the institution versus individually?
Correct. It would be on behalf of the institution. And again, when the institution is not banned from receiving gifts in the course of its mission.
Sure.
But the individual would be banned from receiving gifts.
And that's
gifts.
A big difference, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that, Trustee Coleman, that as we get more and more involved in the international arena, those gift subjects really come into play. To be very careful. If you turn down somebody's gift, in many cases, it's a slap in the face. You have to be careful in that respect, too. So it's a touchy business.
So I need clarification here. Today, we cannot, for federal employees, we cannot provide them with gifts. Is that correct?
There is a federal ban. They have the same types of ethics requirements. I have not reviewed them in detail. So generally, I would say that is correct. To the extent or where there are exceptions, that I'm not certain of.
Okay. So, you know, so what I'm trying to point out to you, I don't think this executive order, I believe it's in keeping with for the federal employees as well. So this is very similar to what's in place for the federal employees. And it doesn't have a dollar limit on gifts. It's saying absolutely no gifts.
Right.
And so this is not totally out of line. I think as an institution, we probably should step back and say, how do we abide by the spirit of the law?
Yeah. Right.
Or the executive order.
What is the travel portion of the ban?
I'm sorry?
The travel portion of the ban.
Well, the travel portion is, again, the gift ban applies to prohibited sources. It doesn't apply to the university paying for people's travel to do their jobs. It's, for instance, if Microsoft is going to hold a conference and Microsoft wants to pay your travel, there's a procedure. There really isn't a ban amount. For travel, the rule is it really work-related? In other words, is Microsoft having you come to a conference where you're going to learn things that are going to help you do your job? If so, they can pay for that, and there's no limit to that. If they're going to send you to, I don't know, Boca Raton for a weekend on the beach, which has nothing to do with you learning your job, no. One of the changes in the executive orders was it used to be the institution's ethics officer that would review that and determine whether or not it was education-related or mission-related for employees. It's now the Executive Ethics Commission that makes that determination under the new executive orders. So the executive orders are a little bit more complex than what the PowerPoint shows. So the rule is not so much an amount. Is it mission-related? Is it educational-related? Does it help you do your job? If it does, a prohibited source like a Microsoft or any vendor can pay for it. If it isn't, they can't.
Okay. Chair Butler?
I would first like to say that we have an ad hoc committee on governance, and we are working on a number of policies. We might take this up in that context and consider how we might incorporate some of these expanded ethics requirements in that. I'm a little bit more interested in the revolving door provisions. Can you tell me what's different about the new provisions, the executive order provisions, and the current law?
I can tell you that the lobbying ones have gotten stricter. Exactly how they've gotten stricter, I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't know if Jerry can or not. I don't know if the 1 year waiting period is obviously shortened from what it was. I'm not sure what the waiting period was before. And I assume that there was not a all-out prohibition of a state employee talking to a lobbying organization before, whereas now you can't even start to negotiate with a lobbying organization or a registered lobbyist organization if you work for the state.
The only thing that I would add to that, and I think Jim is right on point, is that under the new provisions, there used to be a matter in which you can get an exception from the commission for the lobbying issues. That possibility has been eliminated. So there is no process of going to the executive commission now to say, given the unique circumstances, I should be exempted from this rule. So they've eliminated that as a possibility.
So so the board understands this. By state employee, it also means board member.
Yes.
So if we were to be no longer serving on the board, if our terms expired for whatever reason, we would be subject to these revolving door provisions.
Yes.
So I would ask us to be very cautious about that in that regard, because I don't think necessarily want to invite higher burdens if they don't make sense for us, if they are disconnected from our duties as trustees, if they don't involve any entities, for example, that relate at all to Northern. We don't want to add that extra burden onto ourselves and absorb that extra professional limitation that we don't need to absorb because it involves entities that never did business with NIU and proposals that never came before us as board members.
I have a question on that, on the revolving door. My understanding, though, is that's not applicable to the legislature, the state legislature?
I don't know.
Is that correct? That is not?
Know.
So it's applicable. So let me put this in perspective. It would be applicable to a trustee, as John has just spoken of, but apparently it is not applicable to the state legislature?
The state legislature and the other constitutional officers have their own ethics requirements.
But that are different. But the revolving door is not part of it.
And the revolving door is not part of it. Surprise, surprise. That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. We now move on. And
thank you,
Jim, for a very nice and important update. We now move to the Enterprise Risk Management Initiative presentation. Ms. Danza. There you
go. On February 10th, we posted an RFP, a request for proposal for enterprise risk management. And the responses are required. Actually, we pushed that out a little bit because we did have some questions from some of the bidders, which were responded to today. And so the new date for responses is March 4th, is for the responses to be required. The requirements is for a consulting firm who is experienced in an organization of our size and scope and mission, who is familiar with the risks involved and who can guide us, and this is for facilitation and guidance, who can guide us in assessing what we already have in place in certain pockets around the university, in tying those together and seeing where there are gaps, and in making recommendations on how we can inculcate this throughout the culture, as well as documenting them and reinforcing them in the policies and procedures that we'll have in the future. So it's intended to take disparate pieces and combine them so that we can have a comprehensive enterprise risk management philosophy and system.
Great, thank you. Questions, trustees? Trustee Marshall?
Will there be, in the future, follow-up on proposals to tweak the activity?
Yes, if that is, you know, if that is found to be a need that we need to, in a sense, hire out for that expertise, then yes, I'm assuming that we would have those proposals.
Any other questions? All right, well, thank you, Ms. Dancer, for a very nice presentation. Thank you. And Jerry, I guess we're at the end of this. The next meeting of the COW Committee is scheduled for May 28, 2015. And thank you. You're very nice. All right. Well, and with that, I'll now close the meeting unless there's some other discussion. Okay. Adjournment.
I
voted, but you have to vote. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you.